Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show, and I am fired up for this one today, Smiley, because we have a recurring friend of the show, his third appearance on the show today, none other than Jordan Spieth. And a lot to unpack with Jordan. He had the offseason wrist procedure that we've discussed at length, looking good at the WM Phoenix Open, and fascinating to hear him break down that whole sort of process of rehab and comeback and swing changes. Give us a little teaser of what you want the people to look out for in today's episode.
It was a great way to kind of really get a sense of how Jordan feels about his game. You know, coming off of 3 weeks, it was a perfect time to kind of get a sense of, you know, how he would rate the weeks and how the wrist is. So that was in itself was great. We have some things up Jordan that we had for Jordan in this episode that we've had kind of up our sleeve for quite some time that I'm really excited for him to see. And it has to do with fantasy football. So that's just a bit of a hint there. So make sure you tune into that portion of the episode. But yeah, and it just general life stuff. Always fun to talk to Jordan and get his perspective, especially coming off of a wrist surgery. Overall, I just thought it was a really fun interview and had a nice ending too. Just a new segment that I kind of just threw in there at the end called Fuel Stops.
Look out for all that. A debut on the show for first time, long time buddy of yours in Birmingham, Alabama, who is a real character. So we're excited about that. But yeah, it's we're talking off camera prior to this interview about like moving car seats around. Like that's a phase of life that Jordan Spieth is in right now. So fun to have him on to talk about everything from rehabbing injuries, playing golf, and just being a dad and just enjoying the time that he kind of had after post wrist surgery of just getting ready to come back and play on the PGA Tour. So we're not going to delay you any further. Let's get right to it. Smiley's conversation with Jordan Spieth.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. We have a guest who's been on now for his third time. We got Mr. Jordan Spieth joining the show. Jordan, thank you for the time. Just got done with a 3 week stretch, but it's currently day. We're watching TGL and just ask you if you watch any. You're not watching JT play today? What's the deal?
I was out of the house, and then I got a few text messages, and I asked somebody to explain to me what just happened and found out he chipped in to go to extras and won, and yes, they maybe used a hammer on another hole.
Yes.
Those guys got to be pretty tired, so I'm sure that – that woke him up a little bit.
They showed Ludvig Åberg, who was like just, you know, obviously won yesterday. He's playing two matches this afternoon, which coming off of a crazy West Coast where he was sick. I mean, this was kind of what it was always going to be, right? With TGL, like it was going to be cool once you got in there, but the issue for a lot of players was the potential of travel coming from the West Coast all the way back. Obviously, you're not on a team, Jordan, and a year coming off wrist surgery. I imagine it's nice for you to be able to head home, and then maybe in the future you could be on a TGL team. Who knows, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I talked with those guys from the very beginning and, you know, just where I'm at in life with my two young kids, and I live in Dallas. Just isn't a great time right now given when it is in our schedule, and you're seeing these guys obviously shoot back, but most of those guys either live there or live close to there or
That's right.
don't have kids, multiple kids under 4 years old. So, a little different place in life right now, but, you know, certainly that one that took place that Tiger Rory won, was pretty exciting to the end. And then, from what I'm hearing, this one today was as well. So,
yes.
Yeah, the concept is pretty cool. I'm having, a different demographic when I'm at the course asking me about it than, you know, your typical, network consumers on the weekend of a PGA Tour event. So, they seem to be potentially accessing what they're trying to access, which is great. If it's another way to help grow the game.
So no team is like silently try to recruit you. Although you say that, hey, right now I'm unavailable. Like if you look at Jordan Spieth on the waiver wire list, like currently it says like untradeable, like can't get you to come join the team. What about a sub? Could you be a sub?
I've been asked by a couple players now to sub in.
Who's still, asked you?
still seeing that as an issue from my scheduling purposes here. I've been there when Scotty's been asked, and it's the same kind of situation. So they're one of these venues in Dallas, and we might have a better chance of joining. So maybe down the road.
Can we workshop a Dallas team name? What would be the Dallas what?
Well,
let's see how you're on your feet.
Cowboys and the Mavericks are kind of taken and not really in the best light right this second. So, you know, we'd probably get in trouble for using those anyways, but you got anything?
No.
The Schefflers. We could be the Dallas Schefflers. I'll take the Dallas Schefflers.
Hey, that's fine. That's totally fine. You'd have to recruit Tom Kim over from Jupiter.
Yeah, we could get Willie Z, I think, and then you could get
okay.
So we'd have to trade Tom Kim for maybe some, I don't know.
Well, maybe you can get Kisner over in a package deal.
Yeah, first rounder and 2 second rounders or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's been interesting, like you're talking about TGL, different demographic, the unique impressions they've been getting. It's hopefully going to be good for the game. And your game, which you just got done with a 3 week stretch, like we just talked about, in San Diego this past week, you played with Ludwig Åberg the first 2 days. Talk about that Thursday round. And it's always interesting too, when you get paired with the eventual winner, because you kind of see, you know, what it, you know, potentially took and some of the hurdles that he may have dealt with that Thursday round, shooting two over and still winning that end up winning the golf tournament. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think he's going to ask to be paired with me all the time. The only two times I've been paired with him the first two rounds were the Masters last year and then this event. And he almost won the Masters last year and then went and won this one. So I must make the game look hard. He gets some confidence out of it or something like that. But I also missed the cut at both. So as much as I do enjoy playing with him, and I do because it's fun to watch, I might try to stay away from that pairing for a little while. I don't have the same results. It was, you know, we had a really – that Thursday was a brutal day to play golf. It was a very tough golf course, and it was windy and raining. And, you know, I thought he shot a couple under and turned it into a couple over on just your random Torrey Pines stuff, just some pins on knobs where, you know, he missed a few – putts from shorter range. And then, you know, we caught a couple holes. Everyone caught, you know, 4 or 5 holes harder than the rest of them. And on those holes, you know, I think is where he made his bogeys. But for the most part, I was like, man, I shot 4 and he shot 2. I'm, you know, I thought he shot 2 or 3 under and he posts 2 over. And typically that means that you're going to come out the next day with a little bit of fire. And he did. He just didn't get anything to go in the first day. And then, you know, started to have a couple fall early in the second round. And then all of a sudden he was back to being under par for the tournament. So, you know, I told my wife after the first round, I was like, I mean, he's as impressive as I've seen in a long time. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a chance this week. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a lot of events this year going forward. I mean, it's only what, his third year, maybe.
This is technically his second full year, last year being technically I would call last year his rookie year, but the year before that is when he turned pro from getting his PGA Tour U card from Texas Tech, and then played some DP World Tour stuff, played some PGA Tour events, played a lot, and they got on that that European Ryder Cup team.
Right. Yeah. And typically, I mean, I know from my own experience, but also, you know, watching this now with a few guys after me, you know, those guys get, you get that Ryder Cup experience that feels like you're trying to win a golf tournament every round. You play well in that. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden one week things start. I mean, look at what happened to Scotty. It was a similar situation, right? He hung in there, and then early in the year, he gets the putt to fall his way. He wins. And then all of a sudden, you know, what was coming, inevitably, you know, that was just the time for it to come. And, you know, it kind of feels a little bit that way with him. And, you know, it's my job, and a lot of other guys feel that way about their own job, to try and, you know, to step up and try to beat these guys while we're still young enough to do so.
Yes. I feel the aches and pains a little bit more than I may have when I was Ludwig's age. What is he, 24 something years old, 25 years old? Oh, to be young, must be nice. But yes, definitely still have the game to go and take down a Ludwig, or Ludwig, however he pronounces it, Oberg. So Jordan, tell me about you. Tell me about the last 3 weeks. I know, coming off of wrist surgery, just the anticipation of being back, going to play Pebble. Start me there. What was the first day like? Because I didn't know it was as challenging as it was just right off the get go with the wrist.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, I had surgery the third week of August. So it was just over 5 months before playing a tournament round. And I mean, to be totally honest with you, if we go back, you know, 2 weeks before Pebble, I was a legit 4-6 handicapper. I mean,
how many rounds under the belt?
I would have gotten four aside from the pros, and it would have been a good match. So honestly, the meteoric rise from then until now, you know, has been some of the most impressive improvement in my game that I've ever had. But it's not saying a whole lot, because I started lower than I had since I was probably 9. So it was, you know,
was it the speed not there? Like when you're talking like a couple weeks before, shot shapes, like just trying to like weave in? 'Cause like during all of this, like, I know you're working on your golf swing and trying to get back to your DNA. So when you show up to that first tee at Pebble, are you just like, all right, let's see what we got and go find it?
Yeah, pretty much. I think by then, you know, I had and still have a really good outlook on this being a long-term thing. And like, I don't expect to come back and be the best right off the bat. You know, this is a significant process. And I just remember being on I teed off at 10 at Spyglass. Was my first shot that I'd hit in that long. I'd never been through anything like this before. And I was, JT was a nice, comfortable pairing, but I hadn't played any golf with him, you know, since probably July. And I just remember standing on the tee and just feeling very grateful. You know, I mean, it didn't feel very different. Everything felt very similar to just another tournament week, start of a new season. But then when I was walking to the tee, I was kind of thinking about, you know, trying to remember what day two through day seven was post-surgery. Just being like, man, this is awful. But I know it's the right thing to do. It's going to be a long road. Eventually I'm going to be back to doing exactly what I'm about to do right now. I just felt very grateful. I had a lot of, you know, between my family, to friends, to my physios, to therapists, everyone in between, my surgeon, just, you know, a lot of people in my corner coaching me through it, taking me into this place I hadn't been before, and making me feel at ease, making me feel confident about the future. And you know, my team's always been, has always been, I think, the best in the world. And, you know, we needed to do stuff in the shadows, this last 6 months and kind of rebuild, a lot of different things, whether it's just strength in the left hand to, you know, mechanics in the swing, and knowing that it wasn't going to be, you know, my expectations should be low was also a new thing for me. So, you know, I hit a pretty good drive. I thought it in the fairway. I was about a yard or two off, and then I hit a nice shot up onto the green, and I thought, okay, this isn't so bad. And I ended up two under through my first 5 holes, and got off to a good start through 9. And I had a bunker shot on my 10th hole, number 1. And I had to hit it really high and spinny. And all of a sudden the wrist just jammed on me, and it didn't loosen up for the rest of the round. And it's kind of a new experience. So for the first few days there, it was tough. And I spent a lot of time after the round on Saturday on the range. I videoed in with my coach and I was like, look, you know, I was trying to do this, this, this. I got away from the status quo, what we've been doing. I'm going to get back to it tomorrow, but tell me, you know, where do I need to feel it? You know, just, I had a little video lesson in, and that was actually a kind of a big day for me. It was after I shot 79 and I was at a, you know, pretty low point right there, given, you know, it was my first week back. I started off, you know, pretty well and I was excited to be back. And all of a sudden I was like, man, this, I don't like this feeling at all. And so I had a really good session Saturday that led into a really solid round Sunday. And I carried that over into Phoenix, and Phoenix was a little warmer. So I was a little more loose. I didn't worry as much. And I had a really solid week. I mean, that was the first time I was in contention in a year. So, you know, that, and it felt good. I was having fun. I was smiling, laughing. I was competing. Obviously Thomas didn't allow anyone to get close, but, you know, it just felt good to see my name on the leaderboard. And,
right.
And it just, you know, it solidified that, you know, this is exactly what I love to do. And I love feeling this way. And I'm seeking to do that quite often, you know?
And so I have some videos that I took from you from Phoenix, one in the practice round, one, I believe on the Saturday round that Charlie's going to roll in here. And you talked to me a little bit, you know, walking down the eighth fairway on Wednesday, just about trying to get back to your DNA. And as we look at these videos, I just want you to kind of describe what you were doing over the last couple years that you couldn't do now that your wrist is, you know, you've had surgery, you're able to kind of do things that you weren't able to do before.
Yeah. So, you know, whether my wrist caused it or not, I actually don't know. And I don't know if I ever will know, but you know, point here in that rehearsal is I'm trying to get my hands deeper and lower at the end of the backswing. And what they were doing was they just kept carrying on up in the air. So my right elbow ended up really high. My hands would track really high and my hand path would get, start working its way up super steep, where my DNA is for my hand path to kind of start nice and out at the camera there. And then it starts to kind of like my rehearsal, it starts to work horizontally to get depth without going up in the air, and the club can collapse at that point. And then from there, I just do a really good naturally of the club, bowing and shallowing. That's the kind of stuff that I've done since I was 13 years old. So that rehearsal allows me to kind of feel exactly where I need to try to get that backswing. As you can see, the feel versus the reel is quite different. You know, that backswing gets it super deep and super steep, and then it lays into a pretty good spot for that shot there. And the swing length becomes shorter. I don't outrun it with my body. I don't get the big misses.
Yeah.
And then eventually this wrist will start to really, and it did that week is, when I know that I'm doing it right is when I'm in front of, and I can hit these low fades, on command. I can always hit any other shot. If I've got a long iron or a driver that I'm in front of and I'm just pinch cutting, that's when I'm going to play really good golf. And what has to happen for that right now is it requires a lot of this left wrist, because the left wrist is going to have to go in radial, hold in radial, and it's going to have to bow. So it's going to have to go, radial and bow. And, that's kind of my sweet spot. Think a la Colin Morikawa, right? How he takes it up there, and then his left wrist, and Dustin Johnson, you know, they have nice set and then they bow it, and it's almost like an end range bowed feel. And it allows you to just kind of hold that for impact. It's a face stabilizer. Phoenix, I had control of those fades. I mean, I hit some really good long iron shots under pressure on par fives. I hit some good tee balls. And I didn't have them, at all week one or three. And whether that's weather or, you know, by week, I think I just improved into week two. And then last week, I think I just got, I just wasn't quite as well. But the good news is I know what it is. I know what I need to work on. I'm going to rest it here for a little. And, I keep the status quo of what we've been building, because, you know, that was a different kind of feeling than even contending in the last couple of years. That was a different feeling, of control that I had Phoenix. And it was only week two after all that. So.
Yeah, well, this is actually a fun view that I had here. Back right hole location. This was the seventh hole in Phoenix. And you know how challenging the shot is on this hole. And the fact that, like, you were able to set up aiming at the flag stick here. And my favorite part is like, yep, pick up the tee. I'm hitting my spots. It's like a good feeling, right? You know, like when you play a hard par three and you hit your spots, that had to be like a confidence builder, just knowing like you're able to hit the shots that you're trying to create in your head.
Yeah, I'm set up at that little like T sign right there, and that's splitting the pin and the camera tower, and you just can't go at that pin. So the idea is to hit it right at that, play the ball flight. I think I had a 7-iron and I need to hit it a little harder. So this is even, I think I even hit a little draw. You see it kind of launch a little bit right. Just forget about the pin, but it was never going right. I was able, as you see, once you see my chicken wing coming back, that's me holding onto that club face, meaning it's not going to go left. Yeah. You know, I started being able to miss it left, and that's never been a good thing for me because I grew up literally missing 3 shots in a year left. And so when I start to be able to hold onto that face, because the rest of the swing's in the right place, it takes away half the golf course for me. And that's a big weapon. So, I didn't know you had that view. That was a good shot. I ended up putt for birdie, which would have been, you know, there'd only been a few birdies on the hole that day. And that's a hole where you're normally just trying to make 3, and I stole one.
I know.
And then you can roll into the rest of the round, you know, feeling like you're already ahead. So, it was fun. And again, like Phoenix, you know, it's funny. These other two events were elevated, but Phoenix felt the most elevated. I mean, obviously
just because there's so many people, right?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a major, like it's crazy. Yeah. You know, you're just dealing with kind of each round, the pressure of it being like a major. So what I look for there, you know,
this is a driver swing now that we've switched to for those that are listening, and Jordan, the driver, when we were talking about this, like, so last year you drove it so well, and the way you described it to me was that you had a little bit more time in the golf swing to be able to maybe time it up a little bit more than maybe the irons, because it's a shorter swing. But just talk a little bit about your feels, and I see a stronger left-hand grip. Is that something you're working on too?
Well, so when I first ran into left-hand problems back in late 2017, when I first injured my hand, that's when I had really bad weak grip problems. And it's been in a pretty good place for 3 or 4 years now, 4 or 5 years now.
It looks good.
Which is really, I mean, that's everything. I already start with a less than neutral grip, as a number of players do. Some really good ball strikers do, and some really good ball strikers have stronger grips. It doesn't, I guess, necessarily matter based on the players I see. I'm sure.
Isn't it easier to get Isn't it easier to get more wrist flexion in your lead wrist having a weaker grip? I just think about like Colin Morikawa is like a prime example.
So maybe that's what it is versus you certainly have more room to move into it during the swing, whether people do that naturally or not. It's kind of a hard thing, I think, to learn.
Yeah.
But, you know, between JT starts with a weak grip, strengthens it out of transition, Colin, DJ, I mean, these are guys with pretty weak grips, but then you got guys with stronger grips that, they're phenomenal ball strikers too. So, but yeah, there's a chance. I mean, my gloves now, I'm trying to get my gloves made like the old ones I used to wear, where the straps come all the way across. So it makes it look more stronger. Not for it to make it look stronger. It actually just makes the glove fit better. But in general, that could be, but yeah, I mean, my hands on it, I'm not worried about it. If anything, when my wrist would hurt, I would weaken it. So it is something that is when I'm doing, when it looks like that, it means I'm not feeling any issues, but swing length is shorter here. Even when I drove it well last year, I was at or past parallel most of the time. And these drivers are short of parallel. And that's always a good sign from this angle. And then it all just kind of looks, you know, looks together. Right. So, it took me almost 12 weeks to be able to hit a real ball. It took me another 4 before I could really, call it a practice session, 100 balls. From there, I'm still trying to build the backswing mechanics. I didn't go past backswing mechanics until almost Christmas.
Were you just like hitting foam balls, or were you just?
Yeah, I was hitting Nerf balls. I was hitting Nerf balls. I would hit like 20 or 30 real balls, and then the rest Nerf balls from like week 11 and a half to call it 16. And I would work up my real ball count, but I was hitting Nerf balls into a net essentially. and it was, I mean, it's the kind of stuff you watch tournaments and you see, you see Ludwig last week and it's like, oh, it's so easy. Right. But I mean, he went through this at some point, you know, the kind of Tiger talks about how annoying some of the stuff he had to work on was that would, even before he went through swing changes that you wouldn't even necessarily notice that were just timing elements like the pausing and stop. I mean, I did so many start halfway back, pause, go from there, take it to the top, hit it, or go to the top, pause, hit it. And doesn't matter where it goes. It's just trying to rebuild these patterns and kind of get it in your head. And although I did have a lot of time off, I'm still working out of the opposite patterns. It wasn't like it was just fresh concrete to mold. You know, I like to call it like molding concrete, but you know, in general, there's still, you know, if I just swing without really putting my brain on right now, I still do bad habits. I don't get my hands lower and deeper. They start going higher and longer, but they'll do it way less now than they did, you know, 3 months ago. So it's just moving that needle just a little bit at a time. And then, you know, at some point I'll be able to go more brain off and more brain on to something else, which is really the goal. So this first stretch, I did rehearsals, as you saw, on all those swings. Ideally, I don't have to, but what I started to figure out was, you know, when I did a rehearsal, it was just 1% better than when I didn't. And I have that proof from Cameron being on the range and seeing all these shots. Right. And I'd do both of them and he'd be like, yeah, I mean, you just have it slightly better. So it's up to you. If you feel like it's going to hurt you to do a rehearsal and you're not going to be able to focus on the shot, then it's not, you're still going to make progress, but you'll progress a little bit more if you do it and you can still be on the shot. So that's where we're at. So, I feel good. I'm heading into, you know, some really hard golf courses here which will be a good test because it would have been hard to start on these next couple courses. Yeah. Bay Hill and the Players, that would have been a tough, and even, you know, ideally I play Tampa. I'm going to have to see how everything's holding up. But those three courses are all, you know, three of the hardest ones we'll play this year. And now I feel like, you know, it just feels like I'm in season, part of the season. And I feel like I'll go out each day and I'll know that what I'm doing gets me a little bit better. And that's honestly, for me, that's at this point in my career, that's what brings me joy. When I'm contending, but if I know I love the game and I hate being bad at the game and I love being good at the game. And if I know that I'm going out and I'm getting better that day, regardless of what the result ends up being, that process of being confident that what I did got me better. I didn't bail on it. I didn't try to change anything up. That's what makes me pumped at the end of the day.
Let me ask you a little bit about expectations, because heading into Phoenix, you kind of talked about how expectations were still low. And when you play yourself into contention, you feel all those feelings, especially with the big crowd. It feels like a major. How difficult was it for you to take your mind away from playing golf on Saturday and Sunday? I'm sure when you got out there, it was much easier. But how difficult was it for you being in contention Friday night, Saturday night, sleeping, trying to just, you know, wrap your head around like, crap, we're kind of have a chance to win this golf tournament and I'm playing well? Was that a difficult process for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. And for me, it was actually Friday night into Saturday was harder than Saturday night into Sunday, because, you know, Saturday is going to be the craziest day out there, too. But it's also the day that keeps you in it at that point when you're towards the top. And I knew that, you know, I don't have my best stuff. Like I'm working on things pretty brain on when the guys I'm playing against are not as brain on. They're able to, you know, maybe not quite. You know, they're not all at Scotty's level where he's doing the same thing he's been doing. And, you know, it's inevitable. He's going to produce this or that, you know, but for the most part, you know, no one's really sitting there in the same position I was in as far as how limited experience at that point, recent experience, and then how much they have to be brain on mechanics. So that's what was bothering me. It was just like, man, I mean, these guys don't have to feel this. I do. I know I don't have my stuff, but I'm also, you know, now expected to have my stuff because this is the score I'm at. So it's pretty much the question you're asking. For me, it was, you know, I think I did a really good job of voicing it to Michael early, you know, before Pebble Beach, kind of the long-term strategy. And then he did a great job of relaying it back to me on the range and stuff, just being like, hey, you know, what are we going to shoot today? What's the goal? You know, I know you just want to get better. We're not going to worry about, the result. But let's go get four today, And something like that where it's, or I don't even remember. He may not even said, let's not go. He's like, let's just keep our eyes focused on the long term. Just keep making progress, Don't worry about the result. You know, that kind of stuff was really nice to hear because it's just, you know, I want to have the high expectations. I want to be going out saying I expect to win today because I believe I'm better than these guys. But at this, I have to be realistic about the where we're at currently. Doesn't mean that I wasn't going to be able to win the tournament. Right. I very well could have. I mean, shoot, if it wasn't for one guy, I would have had a putt on the last, right? So, you know, there's a lot of ifs in our game. But, you know, point is really one guy from having a putt to go to a playoff. So, you know, having said that, it doesn't mean that I'm not out there fighting as hard as I can. It's just when something doesn't go right, just being like, okay, well, you know, I know what happened. I know how to fix it. And now I'm seeing what's happening under pressure, which is a whole different animal. You know, hitting Nerf balls into a net, to hitting real balls, to hitting balls off grass, to playing a regular round, and then to going and playing in a tournament round. I mean, those levels are huge steps up, each one of them. So it was a really good stint. I really wish I got more out of last week. Having said that, I've made the cut at Torrey once in 10 years and it was in the US Open. So January, February, Torrey Pines is probably the least fun place for me. So I'm going to not take it to mean a whole lot. I'm going to think, you know, I'm going to try to piggyback off of Phoenix here for these next couple weeks of prep and then go into these hard golf courses and play them smart. You got to play these courses differently than these last few. I mean, they're more like Torrey, right? You got to play the spots and as far as the difficulty of them, but they're Bermuda grass, warmer weather. And I think both play into my strengths here.
I can't imagine that week three in this process too, like Torrey Pines, if you had to pick one golf course that probably wasn't quite conducive to a sore wrist, you know, coming off of wrist surgery with the heavy rough, the really the terrible weather that she had Thursday and just how difficult that golf course is. You talked about the success rate on it. Just, I imagine that it had to be a little frustrating for you coming off of a really good week to show up, you know, to Torrey Pines where it's just like, God, like if this was Riv this week, a golf course that, you know, you've played well on, like that kind of had to be a bit of a bummer for you too. Like not a ton of rough at Riv to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I went in with a really good frame of mind. I went in optimistically, even a few weeks ahead of time. I was like, there's few places more beautiful than Torrey Pines.
Go enjoy the walk. Yeah. Go enjoy the
What's
walk.
What's that?
So go enjoy the walk, right?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I played it well in the US Open there. So I thought, okay, if it's going to be playing maybe harder than usual, maybe this is better. But you're right. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't an ideal scenario because my wrist was not in a good place, even Phoenix week, as far as, inflammation. And so you're going in now with thick rough and the grass that you're hitting off of isn't, you know, there's less give, and so it wasn't, I was trying to take time off leading in. So I didn't play any holes till Wednesday. You know, I tried to take off Monday and Tuesday some and do really light days and just think, you know, hey, you know, my strokes gained approach in the last week was really good. That's a very important stat at Torrey. I think I'm going to drive it a little bit better this week than I did in Phoenix. And so I just got to maintain this approach game. And that's really where my bummer is, you know, I know the conditions were tough, but I was like 2 for 10 on hitting the green from either a fairway or a tee box on my second round. And it's like, that's controllable. So, yeah. You know, they're harder shots than they were in the desert. You got wind and you got smaller areas to hit them to and stuff like that. But it just shows, you know, I believe that I'm in a place where I'm optimistic about what's coming, but there's still a long way to go because a course like Torrey Pines, you can't fake it around. And like I watched Ludwig and I'm like, that guy has it right now. He shot over par, but I know he has it right now. And sure enough, he ended, you know, I didn't think he'd necessarily win the golf tournament, but I thought he'd work his way back in there. But you know, I've watched a lot of this over,
of course,
you know, 12 years now.
You're really good about reading a leaderboard and knowing what a good score is that day.
Yeah. And just understanding, you know, being realistic about where I'm at and what needs to improve. And like, you know, am I a top five player in the world because of Phoenix? Not necessarily. I know there were some shots I didn't have that you have to be a top five player in the world. And I got exposed a little last week on that. You know, I've got my own stuff coming back that leaves me in a position to be able to say that as well. And I don't think I'm far off, but you know, realistically, you know, I was a different player than Ludwig was those first two rounds, whether the score was going to show it or not. So, but like I said, I'm on the right path. I feel really good about, I mean, you pulling up videos of those swings, and those are just random practice round swings, one in the tournament, and they look the same and they're with the same iron. I mean, those are, that's a really, it's a really good trend. But you know, it's, I'm trying to find this balance of rest and practice. I need like 2,500 reps, but I need like 10 days off at the same time. You can't get both. So, you know, I've got a lot of old guys in my ear. I don't want to say sorry to the old guys that that are texting me, but, I've got a lot of guys who have gone through injuries and are saying the right things and are, so I don't have to take guesses. You know, a lot of guys, I mean, golf's tough on your body. So a lot of guys have been through a lot and I'm just fortunate that I'm getting some help on the side.
That's great. And this fall, I mean, coming off wrist surgery, I imagine there was a lot of time where you just didn't know what to do with your time. What did you do besides hitting little foam balls into a net? I mean, did you just spend family time? Did you get some chance to watch some football? What all did you do in the fall?
Yeah, I watched more football than I have ever. A lot of family time. You have, my son turned 3 in November. So we had, you know, his birthday and stuff. He loves monster trucks. We're at the monster truck rally. My daughter turned 1 in September. So before him, so we had her birthday right after we got home from Colorado after I had my surgery. My wife's, we got a 3rd coming in July. So it's busy.
Come on.
So we
got, let's go.
You know, anyone who has, and you know, I mean, you got a young daughter, but I mean, it's, I wasn't searching for things to do. I mean, there were certain days where during nap, it's like, well, I wish I could go do something. The weather's great or whatever, but, and you're kind of, you know, held to chipping or putting one handed or something like that. But the 8 weeks went by pretty fast and then I could chip and putt. So I started working that into more full days of just chipping and putting. Good. And, you know, not going to do a lot of damage. Once I could get my putting, once I could get my grip down, I wasn't going to do a lot of any potential damage just putting. So I did a lot of that. Went to a lot of football games. I was home mostly until Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then we got out of the house a lot. We went to Austin, we went to Mexico. And actually we've been out of town a lot since Christmas, which I think was a good thing. Cause I got out and got used to, you know, at least everywhere we went, I played a lot of golf too. So it was almost like a mini tournament to get ready. It was like my minor league starts, but they were kind of half vacation. So, yep. Maybe that is what some of those guys think about that. But, anyway, it was a fun fall. It reminded me that, hey, maybe I need to take some falls a little less seriously, take some time away from the game. Mm. Maybe not as much as I did, but, it doesn't hurt to sometimes take a few weeks. I mean, I don't know how you were, SK, when, but you know, and you've been in Birmingham, which is similar weather, like it's year round weather. So mm-hmm. you know, I went from when I was like 12 and a half, 13 years old until this last year. And I would say before I was a professional, the most amount of time I ever took off was maybe 2 or 3 days. And as a professional, I maybe took off like 6 or 7 a couple times. But that was it.
Well, luckily I played basketball during the off season. So I basically would put the clubs away in high school, all the way from high school before really. I was a two sport athlete, if you will. So luckily for me, pretty much when October came around all the way until February, clubs are put up. I played basketball. And then when, you know, end of March comes around, like, or end of February, it's like, all right, weather's a little better. And I think it probably hindered my junior golf development, not being able to play year round. So when I got to LSU and I like had to play a full year, I was like, holy crap, like this is like a job. So it was good for me to play like two sports in growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did it all the time and I just have not figured out. I mean, it's it's good for you. It's good for your body to take a little time away. And it really was this fall. I mean, I was outside every day, going on hikes. I mean, we stayed in Colorado for a few weeks post surgery, and you know, the kids were outside all day, every day. And that's all you care about. I mean, you wake up and you're like, well, I'm going to do my rehab throughout the day, but there's still plenty of time to go just hang out outside and go to a park, go on a hike, go to the river, whatever.
You said you watched a good amount of football.
Yeah, I watched a lot of football.
So your fantasy team had to be pretty good.
Which one? The one I got last in, or the one I got third to last in?
Let's just start with the one you got last in. Talk about that team and how you developed that roster.
Well, I drafted Christian McCaffrey first overall, which everyone in fantasy who did that probably didn't end up in a great spot because they lost their best player for most of the entire season. I mean, I did have Josh Allen, so there's the bright spot. We also did the draft during something going on, and I just kept running down and just clicking essentially auto draft, which, to be honest, should be better than if I did it myself.
Well, when they do like the rankings, the preseason rankings, your team technically was the number one team. So you did stay in the top 10. Unfortunately, it was a 10-man league and you did finish 10th. And with that being said,
it was a backdoor top 10 too. I won the last week.
we do have a cool video for you, and we're going to play that right now, Charlie, if you can get that pulled up for us.
Hey, Jordan, it's me. Nominated by myself and asked by nobody to come on here and list out the options of punishments for you for finishing last in the fantasy football league this year. I got four for you. Okay. You have to choose one or else you'll be like your brother who didn't do it last year, relegated out of the league, you know, and if you choose to do that, that's up to you, bud. But, the four that we've got for you are the following. The first would be, you have to dress as a yell leader for Halloween this year, one of the Aggie yell leaders.
Next.
The second would be planning, organizing a night out for all of our Dallas friends. Okay. I'm talking everybody, not just the folks in the group text, like everybody that we know. Talking friends, spouses, organize it, get them out and about. But you have to stay home and babysit the kids while they're
doing
If Annie gets to go, she cannot stay home and help you. If anybody has to stay at home and help you, you call Steven in from Fort Worth. You let Maeve go too. Add more kids to it. You have the third option, which is you allow the champion of the league to caddy for you at the Hero this year. And when you choose this one, you tell Greller, sorry that I'm not sorry. And the final one would be when you get new wedges before one of the majors this year, whichever one you choose, you have to stamp something on those wedges along the lines of I suck at fantasy football or fantasy football loser 2024. We'll let you decide what the actual stamps are going to say, but it has to be in that vein. So I don't know if y'all want to just end it there. That's good.
And that was AV on the podcast.
Finally.
That's his first time. He finally made it.
No music. I think I'm going to go for three or four. Two is a non-starter. It's not happening. I'm not babysitting everyone's kids so they can have
how many kids would that be? Would that be 20?
I mean, it'd be 20.
I mean, Austin has like, how many has he got? Like eight of them running around? Like
three, and there could be another one at any point in time, I guess.
I guess so, right?
Yeah, it could be like 20 if
so that's a non-starter. The babysitting is a non-starter.
That's not good for anybody.
No. We just want to present as an option because that's just a one-night deal, you know? If you like kids, like,
yeah, the yell leader, if I got a mask, is fine. If it's my own face, it's not okay.
Okay.
So I'm leaning towards three or four.
You got to applaud the yell leader thought. That's a pretty dang good punishment.
It's fantastic. I thought they were all going to be like that, and I was going to be like, well, I guess I'm relegated. I guess I'm never going to talk to you guys again.
So three is a potential to have, and maybe we could potentially see if it would be not the tournament, but a Wednesday pro-am or something like that. Maybe we can work with the winner of the league on potentially something with the hero, or maybe something out throughout the year. But then stamping the wedges is pretty dang simple. But the problem is, he said major. Like, that's
You're looking at
kind
it.
Of I a mean, big
you're,
week.
You're standing there, you're about to hit your shot into, like, you know, 14, 15 at Augusta, and you're looking, and you're like, I'm a loser.
Yeah. So you don't have to decide now. We could talk about it in the group text, but 3 and 4 is where we're leaning right now. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, it seems fair. The question I would have is, would he roll it over from last year's winner to caddy, or would it be like whoever's leading by December of next year?
Oh, no, it would be AV. AV's
yeah, so he did it for himself.
He's a benefactor. Yeah, he made this list for himself, yeah. Should we talk about Steven?
Actually, I would have a great time doing that. Michael typically wants to take off anyways.
There you go. You might have a caddy. Just saying.
All right.
Just keep it in mind. Sweet. Hey, decision doesn't have to be made today, although it said we kind of need to make it today, but we don't need to.
I don't get first pick next year or anything, though, because we just do a draw.
I know. Our commissioner, I got some beef with the kid, old Red. You know what? Love him to death. But as far as a commissioner goes, not high on my list. I think we should fire the commissioner. That's my hot take. Yeah. So there you go. Fantasy football. Last place. I mean, maybe you should stop watching football quite as much. I think that's the story here, if we weren't anything. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well, then it started to be a bit. It was so bad. I had
trade
like
your
four
entire team, right?
On my team, like three kickers. tried to win with the least amount possible, and then that got frustrating. It's like fading yourself. It's like when you're going cold and you fade yourself and you still lose. That's kind of what it felt like. It was just. Stop.
Sure. Well, finishing up this interview, Jordan, have a couple questions, and this is actually from one of your buddies. I was like, man, you know what? I'm just trying to think about what would be some good topics to talk to Jordan about, that maybe like stories that nobody else has heard about that would be good for a podcast. He's like, well, let me think about it. He's like, you know what would be good? It's like, do a segment and call it like fuel stops, because we've had some incredible fuel stops. And this is talking about airplane fuel stops over the years. And he mentioned one of them being like heading to the CJ Cup, stopping in Anchorage, Alaska, where y'all had, I guess, multiple planes coming to take everybody over, probably like a lot of the top 50 players in the world. You stop in Anchorage, Alaska. And then the other story was one where you just won the Travelers Championship in 2017 after that bunker shot. And then you fly to Memphis, and then another story unfolds. So if you could kind of walk us through those two fuel stop stories, I think it'd be terrific here to try to get in to see what that actually looked like.
Yeah, sure. We like you mentioned, we were going to Jeju Island, Korea, and I got picked up. I don't remember. I think some guys in Florida, and we stopped in Anchorage, Alaska, as you go over for fuel stop before we then went straight into Jeju Island. And there was some time to kill, so we all looked up. It was actually a Sunday in the fall. There was NFL football on. So we found a local, you know, dive bar, and we all watched some football in the afternoon, stretched our legs out, and then, you know, got back in and ended up in Jeju Island, however many hours later. But yeah, I'll never forget it.
So you walk into like a local bar in Alaska with how many of the top players of the world were y'all just going, did anybody recognize you guys at this bar?
No, not a huge golf community there.
You don't say.
Not especially at the bar at noon. but you know, for us it was way later in the day. It was obviously 5 o'clock. So we and probably I mean, I think that day, you know, because we then ran into some other guys who were like, yeah, we just came from there too. Like, everyone had the same idea. So it was probably a dozen guys within, you know, an hour or two. Then we ended up, you know, on Jeju Island. That was 2019, I think, in the fall. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, so to go back, 2017, the Travelers, Ryan Palmer and his caddy, James, we were going to go back home together, and Michael was going to come back so then he could go from Dallas to Seattle. He does that, you know, probably half the time when he's by himself. It's just a lot easier to get back to Seattle from the east if he gets to DFW or he gets to Dallas. And, but I, you know, went to a playoff and then, you know, and then won in the playoffs. So it's really late. We've been sitting for a while, and our scheduled flight time, you know, got moved back probably 3 hours. And as we were coming back, our crew timed out and had to go to Memphis. And we landed in Memphis at, I want to say, midnight.
Wow. Ish.
It's, you know, a long trip from Hartford to Memphis, and landed there around midnight, and then we couldn't get out till like 5 a.m. For a new crew and stuff. And so we had time to kill in Memphis. And so we did it. We kind of, you know, we were celebrating a little on the flight there. And instead of just like trying to sleep at the FBO for a few hours, I don't know who had the idea. It couldn't have been me. Had the genius idea.
I don't know. Very well could have been.
Is it Tupelo? What is it?
I think it's Tunica.
Oh, Tunica. That's right.
Does that sound right?
It's Tunica.
I think it's Tunica. Yeah.
That's where
I've never been. You tell me about it.
Tunica. And somehow we found, you know, an Uber to take us, and we went to Tunica, and, the people watching there on at a casino at 1 a.m. on a Sunday was actually quite different than the one in Anchorage, Alaska. It's kind of a sad place.
Yeah. It's a Sunday night, right? Like
we came in
2 or 3 in the morning, and y'all coming
fast.
In.
We got smoked fast, and we came with what we had. And, you know, it was gone quickly. And then we just went back and we sat around and then we came home at 5 a.m. from Memphis, which was, you know, their 40-minute flight back home. But yeah, a couple fuel stop situations. You know, there's been a few others. We almost had a couple down soldiers a couple times in Bangor, Maine.
I was one
JT.
Of them.
JT was out one time. He was down bad and, you know, he luckily made it. He almost stayed in Maine.
Chick-fil-A is close though. There.
What's that?
There's a Chick-fil-A close in Bangor, Maine.
No, that is true. That is true. Yeah. Shoot. You were maybe one of them that was down bad too, but,
I was, I sure was.
Anyway, yeah, that's a good segment. Fuel I'm interested stops. To see the rest of the stories on fuel stop on, coming
that's
up.
That's all we got. Fuel stops. That's a new segment. There it is. All right, Jordan, this has been fun, man. Looking forward to kind of your prep as you get, you know, heading towards that first major. I know that's a place that you probably already thinking about golf shots and certain, you know, feels that you've had there in the past, trying to get ready for that week's first major. When does that prep really kind of start for you? Is it, I know you're in a position now where you're just taking a day at a time. Is that kind of helpful when it comes to preparing for a major? Is that you're just like 1 foot in front of you at this point?
You know, it really, it hits me right, you know, so like maybe 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out. I'm not really prepping now. I mean, Bay Hill is enough to prep for. Then the Players is its own animal. It's normally that break after Florida. And then, you know, one, you know where your game's at. You've now played really hard golf courses. And then you can maybe start to whether you're going to tinker with clubs in the bag, if you're going to put in a different lofted hybrid or a 7-wood or a 3-iron, whatever route you're going to go, you're starting to kind of really practice with those with certain shots in mind. And for me, that's it's normally a week off, then a tournament, then the Masters. That's kind of the whole, you know, gearing into it. So, you know, I'm not, the goal right now is to get healthier than I left last week. And then to start to progress from where I've been. And like I said earlier in the show, it's like, I mean, I feel like I went from a 4 to a +6 in 4 weeks time. And I got to try to get to a +10, like some of these other guys. So, that's the hard one. is pushing that level to get to where that consistency is there week to week. And, you know, we don't have these one-offs contending, but instead I start to forget more about my wrist, get a little more consistent in all the striking and the short game. And, but it was a really good start, from what my goals were going into it. So, you know, ideally come to a place here at Bay Hill where I've had good success in the past. I've only played it, the last 21, 2, 3, and 4. So, but I've played it well, and I really like that we're heading there with where I'm at right now. I think it's going to tell me a lot.
Perfect, man. All right. Well, look forward to watching you. See you soon on this Florida swing, and congratulations to you and Andy, and best of luck to you, not only in the golf course, but in fantasy football, hopefully, if you're still in the league in 2025. Jordan Spieth, thank you, my buddy.
Appreciate it, SK.
Well, there you have it, Smiley. Golly, so much to unpack there, but really, I think we can't go anywhere else other than the debut of AV, Andrew Versiglio, on the show. A man who put us on Kaneka sausage, a favorite of the Hume household these days, a favorite of my son Walker, but also a man who can put together a rambling, incoherent fantasy football punishment video better than probably anyone else on the planet. Love seeing his face.
Yeah. It was nice to have him on. It's not going to be his last time.
that's a Smiley Kaufman guarantee.
Shop local. Shop at the Pig.
Shop. That was my one regret in preparing that video for Jordan and you to watch. I covered up his Piggly Wiggly quarter zip with the graphic lower thirds. But now we're mentioning it here. Yeah, go shop at the Pig. So you're at this point in time, it's a Wednesday, you're in Mexico, ready for a little Vedanta action.
When this episode comes out, I will be in Mexico with some warmth in my bones. Right now I'm actually just freezing in my downstairs basement. So yeah, excited to get to Vedanta. Gonna be a fun week. Start of a big swing, man. I'll have eight in a row weeks, so looking forward to just sinking my teeth into covering golf this whole stretch, but hopefully we can figure out who's going to play well this week, because we haven't done a really great job lately figuring out when people are going to play well what certain weeks. So we'll see. Hopefully we get it right.
Yeah, well, tune in on Instagram Live if you want to know who to fade this week in Mexico. We'll give you eight of the players you should absolutely not touch, stay away from at all costs. And then I'll bump for the following week, Smiley, because we're going to do a Mexico Open recap, and then you and I are going to be together in sunny Palm Beach, Florida, for a number of different exciting things. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Good time indeed. So we appreciate y'all watching and listening as always, and head over to the Instagram to check out the one and done picks, and we'll talk to you right back here for a Mexico Open recap next week.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.